You are listening to the Loikamania Pop Culture Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase your favorite trade paperbacks and hardcovers for up to 45% off cover price.
How's it going, everyone? Pat Loika here. You're listening to Loikamania episode 64. This week, I am joined by my good buddy, Antonio Cuneo.
How's it going?
Welcome back, man. It's been a while since I've had you on where it's just us talking about stuff or talking to someone instead of being in a wrestling round table.
In a rage-filled wrestling round table.
Yeah, this is all happy thoughts because today we get to talk to one of our favorite writers, Mr. Chris Yost. Chris, of course, is famous for his work on books like X-Force and the new X-Men for Marvel. And he also wrote Red Robin for DC. And one of the things he's also known for is his animation work, where he writes for he wrote for X-Men Evolution, Wolverine and the X-Men, and of course Avengers: Earth's Mightiest Heroes. Now, are you a fan of any of these shows, or are you more into his comic stuff, Antonio?
I was a really big fan of the X-Men cartoons, the Wolverine and the X-Men. I was a huge fan of, and I really liked X-Men Evolution. I haven't really watched the Avengers, but I'm a huge fan of his comic book work. Him and Craig Kyle on New X-Men and X-Force, and bringing X-23 to the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. Yeah, big fan of that stuff.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun stuff, and we kind of get in depth a bit. We talk about how he broke into the biz. We talk a little bit about individual titles. We spend a lot of time talking his X stuff because that X stuff really resonates, and it's stuff that.
It's totally shaped the X-Men right now, and I mean as you'll hear, stuff that him and. He did in X-Force actually resonates now with what's going on in Schism.
Yeah. So there's plenty to like. There's a lot of stuff. I don't think Chris Yost does many interviews or podcasts. So there's going to be a lot of stuff here that you probably have not heard before because he's not really the most prolific as far as, making appearances in podcasts and shows. So I think people will dig what we have, what we get out of him. And he's a really, really nice guy. And I appreciate the fact that he took the time to talk to us for a bit about his career and his work. Antonio, where can people find you online?
Same place as always at Twitter at Thwipstar. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. And you can find Chris Yost at twitter.com/Yost or at Yost on Twitter. And, of course, you can find Mr. Yost's work through our friends over at CheapGraphicNovels.com, where you can purchase his X-Force work and his new X-Men work for up to 45% off. And you can also find his work for DC there, like his Red Robin stuff and his stuff during the Battle of the Cowl, So... Yeah, give them a shot. They take good care of us here at the show. And, of course, you can find me at my usual spots at about.me/Pat Loika. And my Twitter account is twitter.com/Pat Loika. Again, I appreciate, and I will emphasize this again, I would appreciate it very much rather if people would stop by our iTunes page and leave us a review. And let us know what you think of the show, because it would be greatly appreciated. And... we got a lot of fun stuff coming up, a lot of great guests, and the best is yet to come. So keep listening, and I hope you guys are digging the show. So until next week, you guys take it easy, and give your favorite comic book some love, man, because there's not enough love going on for comic books, and I think people should be talking about the stuff they love. So you guys take it easy, and we'll see you next time. We're back, and this time we are joined by one of our favorite writers. Well, probably he's very prolific this year. He's done the Avengers: Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon and the comic version, and he's also doing he's doing Fear Self, The Fearless later this year, and of course a secret project that we'll kind of touch upon but not really get into. And this is Mr. Chris Yost.
Hey, everybody.
So, Chris.
How's it going, guys?
Oh, we're doing good, man. How about yourself?
Yeah. I'm doing all right.
Excellent. Now, before we kind of get into the real meat of this thing, I was always curious as to what got you into into doing comics.
You know, it's kind of a roundabout sort of story. I used to produce TV and radio commercials in Detroit, Michigan, and it was a great job. I enjoyed it, but you know, at a certain point, you know, it was Detroit, so there was a lot of automotive stuff, and I did my 10,000th like brake commercial for car parts, and I'm just like, you know what? There's probably more to life than this. So I actually ended up going to graduate school in like film business. I figured I could produce commercials, I could maybe produce something else. And while I was out here, I knew that Marvel had an office out here, so I just called them up, just called out of the blue and said, hey, do you guys need any help? At that time, Marvel West was like five people. It was like Avi Arad, Kevin Feige, Craig Kyle, and you know, like a couple of assistants. But largely, it was a very small shop because they were, you know, kind of like licensing out the right to do their films, like Spider-Man and whatnot, to the studios. They hadn't formed like Marvel Studios at that point. And they're like, yeah, you know what? We're always looking for, you know, interns and whatnot. So I came in and. It helped out, but it was a great situation because it was so small. I really got to, you know, be part of it. And it was just, yeah, at the time, X-Men, I think, had already come out. Spider-Man was, you know, in production, and it was, you know, an exciting bit. And then from there, it kind of exploded. But while I was there, you know, I had realized pretty quickly that film business was not for me. Because the program I was in, it was a lot of like knocking on doors and asking people for money so you can make movies, which I'm not necessarily, I'm not really cut out for talking to people or being social. But we had a couple of writers come in, so like we had a class that was like how to deal with uppity writers from the standpoint of a producer. And we had to write a few pages, and I wrote a few pages, and I just kept writing. So I ended up with a couple of screenplays and, you know, realized that's what I wanted to do. And then while I was at Marvel, I was able to show some of those screenplays around, and one guy that read one and enjoyed it was Craig Kyle, who was kind of like heading up the animation division at Marvel there, and he was working on a show called X-Men Evolution, and said, hey, do you want to write an episode with me? He had come up with a character for the show called X-23. Nice. Craig created her and, you know, wanted to write the episode, and he and I kind of teamed up on this, and we wrote, you know, the first episode of X-Men Evolution with X-23 in it, which then led to a few more episodes of X-Men Evolution, and from there I kind of went off on my own and did, you know, like a couple episodes of the Batman show and about a year on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. But, you know, at the time, other stuff was going on at Marvel, and they were really, like, Joe Quesada and Dan Buckley and those guys were interested in bringing X-23 over to the comic book side. Joe was doing a book called NYX with Josh Middleton that ruled, and he had X-23 in there. At the same time, they're like, all right, we want to do an X-23, you know, origin miniseries. So they went to Craig and said, do you have any thoughts on it? And of course, Craig at that point had already written reams of material on the history of X-23, and he called me up. He's like, hey, do you want to do a comic? And I'm like, bullshit. You're kidding me, right? Because, you know, at that point, even though I was writing on, like, you know, the animated series and whatnot, it still, in my mind, wasn't as awesome as writing comic books. But it was real, and he and I wrote the six-issue X-23 mini. And, you know, in January of 2005, you know, it came out, and I got to see my name on a comic book, and it kind of changed my life forever.
Now, you aside from X-Men Evolution and all the other cartoons you mentioned, you've been kind of building up your portfolio basically of your work. What One really, I mean, you kind of mentioned already also how you kind of got into the comics thing from there. But what did you learn, you know, working as far as working animation, like, you know, writing scripts for cartoons comparing it to writing, you know, comic books? Like, was there a learning curve for you, like going from one to the other, or you find it fairly easy to just switch between the two?
You know, it's funny because, like, with both of them, mm-hmm. with animation has a kind of a script style very similar to just feature screenplays. Mm-hmm. And you can find feature screenplays pretty mm-hmm. much anywhere. And, mm-hmm. you know, you just use an example and you just, you know, throw it out there. And, mm-hmm. you know, X-Men Evolution had a story editor named Greg Johnson who, mm-hmm. you know, helped us out and gave us pointers and tips here and there. But, you know, largely it's not rocket science. It's you know, as far as like the formatting and style and all that business mm-hmm. goes. The comic books, though, you know, it's like we got offered the gig and we're just like, hey, do you know how to write a comic book? And Greg's like, no, do you? I don't. So you know, I went online and I just tried to find as many scripts as I could, and then I kind of glommed on to Warren Ellis. He had put a number of scripts out there just for people to look at. And I really like his style and his formatting. So yeah, ever since then, I've just, you know, mm-hmm. kind of aped Warren Ellis because, you know, if you're gonna steal from somebody, that's the guy.
Yeah.
So my script formats are basically Warren Ellis's. And, you know, you always tinker and you do a little few things here and there. But largely I've kept to that style.
That's pretty cool, man. Actually, we kind of skipped over how was the breaking in process as far as the TV is concerned? I mean, you mentioned that, you know, because you had worked with Craig Kyle, you kind of got you in there. But was there any kind of process that he had to kind of put you through so that you could start writing scripts for TV? Or,
well, not really. It was a unique position. And, like, whenever anyone asks the, like, how do you break in story, like, I always feel like a cheater because, like, I really kind of broke in a very sideways sort of way. I mean, I, you know, Craig was an executive on the show. And mm-hmm. and the bottom line is, like, had it sucked, like, had I just, like, completely tanked, mm-hmm. you know, I wouldn't have gotten a second episode. Mm-hmm. You know, and it would have been on the story editor to take my crappy script and fix it. But, you know, we always say it's like, you know, opportunity knocks and luck has a great deal to do with it and the universe kind of lining up and all that business. But once you get your shot, then it's on you to kind of make it happen, you know, to make it work and to get that second job.
Of course.
You know, the first job is always like a kind of a miracle, but the second job is like that's – you got to earn that from the first one. So, you know, the only real, like, hazing was just like, you know, the abject fear that that I was going under, and then just the pressure of getting it right. And I mean, you know what, Greg rewrote chunks of it here and there, and there were notes, and you know, you got to fix it up. But you know, largely it wasn't so bad.
Excellent, Antonio. You had a question for Chris?
Yeah, I was just wondering how different writing is for you now, you know, since you started out at Marvel with, you know, always co-writing mostly with Craig Kyle, and now you're doing more solo stuff. How's that been?
You know, it's been all right. I mean, working with Craig is great because Craig is a ton of fun, and we just have a blast working together, and we largely share the same sensibilities. But, you know, the great thing about it is you've always got something to kind of bounce ideas off of. You know, like, we'll come to the table and we'll, you know, we usually work over dinner. And, you know, he'll have 100 ideas and I'll have 5 ideas. And, you know, we just kind of trade back and forth. And it's great because, like, you know, if you got some idea and it blows, but you think it's the greatest idea in the world, you got somebody to call you out on it. You know, it's, you know, we really tried to, you know, from day one, we just said, you know, no ego involved. I'm going to say stuff that sucks. You're going to say stuff that sucks. You know, it's, you know, the best idea always has to win. Like, if I'm so excited about, you know, Pixie getting married to Elixir on the moon, you know, if there's some idea that's better, you know, we're going to do that. And I can always have Pixie get married later. So, you know, we always tried to do it that way.
And kind of moving forward a bit, you talked about X-23 making the jump from the from animation into comics, and of course you know, ending up doing comics work because of that. How do you feel about seeing, you know, all these other, you know, other folks kind of taking over the character since you have, you know, since you kind of relinquished your hold on her? It must be quite a thrill to see other people do their versions of her.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what we always wanted. You know, the bottom line is, like, we really wanted to put her out there, tell the origin, tell, like, a couple of years' worth of stories, and really just kind of establish who she is, so that people, like, you know, in the early days, I mean, nobody really kind of knew what she was about. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, people would just, you know, put her in weird costumes and have her growl a lot. And I mean, yeah. Like, you know, it happens. You know, the bottom line is it happens. You know, you can get the gist of a character. It's like, all right, can you put X-23 in the book? All right, who's X-23? Clone of Wolverine. And then you just kind of, like, fill in the blanks. And it can go... It can't, you know, it doesn't always go so great. But our goal was to really, you know, get her out there, get her established. This is who she is. This is how she acts. This is kind of like her world and history. And then let other people just kind of run with it. Because, I mean, the bottom line is there's a ton of talented people out there. And, you know, it would just be ego to say that, you know, only we can write her, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there are days where we feel like that, sure, but largely, like, you know, the more people can bring to her and the more they can put her out there in the universe, the better for the character.
It was very good, I guess, for you guys to establish that she's more than just girl Wolverine.
She had to be. Mm-hmm. Like, from, yeah. I mean, Craig and...
I mean, X-23 is one of my favorite characters at Marvel right now, and what you guys have done and what Marjorie Liu's doing right now is just awesome.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, it's... yeah, I mean, in many ways, she couldn't be more different than Wolverine.
Yeah.
You know, sharing that kind of heroic DNA, mm-hmm. but, you know, starting her off in the most damaged, inhuman spot possible. Like, she's the worst-case scenario of what would have happened to Wolverine had he not escaped. You know, she's like the Weapon X success story, you know?
Yeah.
Like, they got, like, an assassin that would, you know, follow every command and do every mission and be perfect. And then she didn't really escape so much as was, like, set free. And then, you know, with that as your foundation and your starting point, and the DNA of Wolverine, where does it go?
The character has really gone through a lot, and you put her through a lot also when you guys took over the new X-Men book. And I say you put her through a lot because you guys really left a body count in that book.
And yeah, that's true. We did.
Yeah, that first arc alone, like in the post House of M Marvel universe, was just it was kind of surreal to see you guys just, you know, they basically just let you guys go nuts and, you know, hey, okay, yeah, kill whoever you want, do whatever. When you guys had pitched that opening story where you brought back, you know, Stryker, you brought the Purifiers in on this, what was the reaction to that pitch when you talk about all the casualties that you guys had to do to kind of illustrate the point behind this threat?
You know, it's funny because, like, to us, you know, we worked with Mike Martz on that. We worked with Axel on X-23, and Mike Martz in the X office called us up and said, hey, you guys interested in new X-Men? Mm-hmm. With the thought of putting X-23 in it. Mm-hmm. And we're like, absolutely, we're in. And they started talking about Decimation and House of M and this horrible event in the world of mutant kind. And we're a huge X-Men fan, so we just wanted to play in that playground anyway. But new X-Men we liked because they were kind of like the... You know, the underdog book, you know, like, mm-hmm. nobody, you know, it was doing good, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't, I don't know. I don't know what the impetus was for the change, but the change was required, they thought. So we came on board, and they're like, all right, here's the deal. Decimation. Mutant kind just wiped out, basically. Worst thing ever. All right, we're going to make it bad. You want bad? We're going to bring bad. You know, it's like, how do you take something bad and make it 1,000 times worse? Like, these kids, like, you know, they've been around, you know, a couple of years maybe, but, you know, we really wanted to put them to the fire. You know, we really wanted to, like, see what these kids were made of. And, you know, if, you know, it's like, welcome to the X-Men. Hope you survived the experience. Guess what? We're going to give you an experience that they'll never forget. So that was the plan. It's just like, if this is mutant kind's darkest hour, well, we want people to think, man, that's pretty dark.
So, definitely worked.
we went about doing that, and fan reaction was, people had emotions about it. And I mean, like, to us, that's the best thing. If you love us or hate us, that's great. If you're just like, yeah, whatever, that's the worst.
Yeah, there was quite an uproar after, you know, particularly all the characters you guys killed off. And I'm like, hey, you know, it actually got me even more interested in the story because, to be honest, I wasn't really big on that book at the time it was coming out. But I figured, you know what, the decimation thing, I wanted to check out what was going on. So I tried it, and I was like, okay, I'm hooked. I want to see where this goes. But, man, those poor kids.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, what is it, like 5-6 years ago?
It's been about 6 years now, yeah.
We still hear about it. So it's, you know, it obviously, for better or worse, left an impression. Like, yeah. Literally, I could write a Power Pack book, and people would be like, oh, my God, he's going to kill him.
Oh.
That happens quite a bit.
Really?
Yeah. Like, in any message board thread where, like, you know, we're mentioned, basically, someone's like, dude, they're going to kill him. Like, oh, my God, he's writing a Molly one-shot. From Runaways, and I'm just like, no, that's not all we do. But you know, between New X-Men, Rough Ride, and X-Force, I mean, I can, you know, I totally understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, and of course, you guys took New X-Men forward, and you know, I really enjoyed, you know, all the artistic teams you've had there, and you guys really brought out the best in Scotty Young, and I also enjoyed. I really enjoyed all the new characters. And, you know, the characters that you guys you used to see in the background of the books, you just kind of brought them forward. Like, you know, like Pixie all of a sudden became a big character, Anoli, Rockslide. I really enjoyed the characterizations of these characters, and I always thought it was weird. It kind of felt weird when other people are writing them, because for some reason, the voice isn't quite as good as when you guys were doing it, because, were these characters that, you know, characters that you just really wanted to develop and made your own, or was it something that, you know, you guys were kind of had to bring them forward just because of all the characters that you guys have done away with?
You know, it's funny because, like, when we started, we really wanted a team that, like, if you put them in a silhouette in a lineup, you'd be able to identify and name them all. You know, and I mean, like, to us, like, you know, some of the more fun mutants are the ones that have, like, the physical mutations, like Rockslide and Anola and Pixie. And, I mean, to us, it's like, you know, you see a silhouette of Colossus and Nightcrawler and, you know, Wolverine, you're going to know who they are. So, I mean, to us, we took it as a challenge. It's like, can we take a character like Anola and make him, you know, make him stand out, make him cool, make him, you know, make other writers want to pick him up and run with him. And I mean, like with Pixie, that happened. You know, we were able to take Pixie, who kind of was the background character, and, you know, we wanted to see if we could make people love her. We wanted to see if we could make Pixie the new Kitty Pryde, you know.
Yeah, and then
history will tell the tale, but
that worked with me and Surge. I became a huge fan of that character.
I love Surge, and I mean, I feel kind of bad about Surge because, like, you know, that book ended, but I the story that we were going to tell with her wasn't quite over because we put her in, like, some dark places.
Yeah.
And she had a rough ride with leadership. You know, things continued to go bad, but, you know, there was a Surge redemption story coming.
Oh, man. See, it would have been cool if you guys could have, you know, done a follow-up or something, or, I don't know, kind of get the whole band back together and do something with those characters again. Maybe eventually.
Yeah, Nick Lowe and I talk about it quite a bit. He's a big fan of the characters, and I mean, they're staying alive. I mean, you're going to see him in, you know, the Regenesis books. So I mean, they're not going away. So there's, you know, you never say never, I say.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that they're not starring in their own book though. It looks like they're just going to be background characters in other books, which is kind of a shame because like I said, you guys really brought out some strong characterizations out of these people. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but hopefully we'll see more of them than just being characters in the background or cannon fodder for Cyclops or Wolverine.
Yeah, I hope so, because, I mean, it's always, you know, to me, it's like the young mutants that just got their powers and are struggling with them and really trying to, like, you know, figure their place in the world out. I mean, those are, like, you know, the kids that haven't gone into space yet. You know, to me, that's interesting because you see these things with new, fresh eyes. That's kind of what I loved about New X-Men.
And also, I mean, You kind of brought it up for a little bit, but how do you feel about the characters right now that have been picked up by other writers? Like, what do you think of you know, how Pixie is being handled, or Rockslide, all those guys in other books these days?
you know, I mean, everybody adds their own kind of voice to it. I mean, you know, the bottom line is, you know, you never, you know, you always take a little bit of ownership on them. Like, I'm a huge fan of Rock Slide and Nole, and I think they're fun, and, you know, I have a blast writing them. But, I mean, I think that, you know, what other writers have done with them, you know, just kind of adds to the tapestry. It just adds to those experiences, and, you know, if you get a chance to write the characters again, then you can just, you know, build on that.
Excellent. And, of course, from New X-Men, you eventually ended up on X-Force.
Yeah. Now, before that, I just want to ask about how the whole Messiah complex came together.
Oh, yeah. Good move there.
That was, you know, it all kind of started with House of M. You know, Scarlet Witch did her little No More Mutants thing, and mutant power kind of went away in a large way, and we always knew that it would lead to the moment when they started coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, Axel had kind of, like, come into the X office, and that was his first kind of, like, major push, you know, as the senior editor of the X office was Messiah Complex. And he really wanted, like, this kind of clean story about, you know, the very first mutant born post-House of M. And the, you know, the race to controller, you know, to his mantra was always like, you know, saver, controller, killer. Like, those are the factions. And then there's a random fourth faction that was eater. But, you know, it was great because, like, you know, the creative teams on the books at the time, it was, you know, Brubaker and Peter David and Mike Carey and me and Craig. And, you know, it was a small room and we got together, and just, you know, talked it all out. You know, we hashed it all out kind of over a couple of days, and it was pretty badass. I mean, like, everybody brought something kind of great to it.
Yeah, that was the first, like, major X-Men crossover in a long time. I think the last time they did something close to that was, I think it was Operation Zero Tolerance, where it crossed from one book to another. That was some time back.
Yeah, it'd been a while.
Yeah, and it was. A lot of people complain about event fatigue, but we haven't had an X event in a while. And like in the previous episode, actually, of the show, I talked with Ron Richards of iFanboy. We were talking about how the X office really does the best event stories because of the way they continue week to week, and you get this gigantic super story at the end of it. Now, how are the logistics behind that? Because, you know, at that time, there's five different writers altogether, and all these artists. Like, did you guys ever had to worry about, you know, last minute changes before because of, you know, like, say, an artist draws a character differently in one book, or you know, discontinuity related stuff? How was that like for you guys?
You know, that is the wonderful world of editorial. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really, they kind of have to take it upon themselves to make it flow. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a challenge to take that kind of book on, but mm-hmm. I mean, like, you know, you know, part of the fun of their job, I hope, you know, being able to kind of, like, manage this world and all these people. And it's like, if it comes off, you're heroes, you know. And, of course, you know, of course there's always going to be people kind of nitpicking everything. And, like, you know, the sun was only halfway up in the sky in that scene. But, you know, the next book, it was, like, three quarters of the way up in the sky. And, I mean, just, like, there's a bunch of random stuff. And, I mean, you know, we always do the best we can. And you've got a lot of eyes on it. And hopefully, you know, we catch all those little glitches here and there. But largely what we did was, you know, we sat down those 2 days and really kind of put together the bones of the story. Mm-hmm. And then editorial then kind of typed it all up in a master outline. And that outline would then go back and forth between all the parties, and we'd add stuff, and everybody had to, you know, like, put in their own comments in a different color, and it was a very colorful document. But you know, largely it's just like, you know, you get one master document, and you start kind of, like, passing it back and forth. And, you know, like, occasionally people throw in an idea that changes everything, and you tear some stuff up, and you nail other stuff down, and... And, you know, at the end of the day, you get something that you're all kind of happy with and it kind of makes sense. On the artist side, it's a little trickier because you got artists working, you know, on different schedules and, you know, maybe doing an issue ahead and an issue behind. And it gets a little trickier on that end. But, you know, as far as, like, the writing and the story goes, it's largely pretty – it seemed like it was pretty smooth. You know, I've heard that it's not as smooth on, you know, the massive events. But because this is contained in basically four books, it really was pretty manageable.
It's very focused, and it really brings out, you know, the emphasis on the serialized storytelling aspect of comics, because, like, okay, come back next week to see what happens next. And I always enjoyed that. And you guys, of course, did and then they did, you know, Second Coming, like, the other year, which is also great.
And there was also Messiah War
and X-Force
and Cable.
Yeah. But before we get into Messiah War, though, we'll talk about X-Force for a little bit. Now, was this a book that you guys had pitched, or?
Well, within the Messiah Complex meeting, mm-hmm. everybody basically realized there's going to be this squad of X-Men within Messiah Complex kind of operating with kind of a kill order on Cable, mm-hmm. or Cable, rather. Mm-hmm. And everyone realized, well, you know what, guess what? That's probably a book right there. And Craig basically leapt across the table to mm-hmm. grab it. He thought that was awesome, and I thought it was awesome, but yeah, we basically, you know, put our stake down for X-Force.
Yeah,
and Axel, you know, we had to, you know, throw out a pitch, and Axel dug it, and we fought for it. So it was something that we wanted to do. We felt it really fit our sensibilities, and we could bring something fun to it.
Yeah, that was honestly one of my favorite X titles of the last, God, 10 years or so.
Yeah, totally.
It was just, it's a great concept, and, like, it's a great set of characters. I mean, I never would have thought that you could turn Warpath into such a great character. And of course, you guys bringing back the Archangel, you know, it was pretty amazing. And of course, one of the most memorable images from that entire run was that 2-page spread where you see all these enemies of mutant kind with their body counts, and I'm just like, holy shit, this is like the worst thing to ever happen to the X-Men.
Yeah, I mean, like, we went for it, man. I mean, much with the way we did on New X-Men, we just, like, really wanted to kind of take it to the next level. It's like, if somebody's really out, if Bastion comes back in a really methodically calculated way to take out mutant kind, he found it. Like, that was, how would the Terminator, how would Skynet take out mutant kind? And, you know, we really wanted to kind of bring that to the forefront, like just the pure, like, you know, the Ultron of the X universe, basically.
Yeah,
and to put our guys up against that, you know, like, everyone kind of joked they were the Claw Squad or, like, the, you know, the Growl Squad or whatever, the Lupine Avengers, right? And, quite a few of them. But, you know, it's like, how do we take this squad of people that really aren't equipped to deal with a threat like this and, you know, have them have to do it? They've got to do it. They can't save me in guns. You know, like, that's that was exciting.
I really enjoyed it. I mean, the team dynamics are great. It's kind of nice also that you kind of expanded beyond, like, you know, the hunter types of the X universe, and you added characters like Domino and the Vanisher, who really served as great comic relief for that title when it got a little too dark.
Yeah, and I mean, that was the thing. Like, pretty instantly we realized, well, you know what, it's got to expand, because you're right, they all do have claws, and it's kind of weird. And I mean, like, you know what, hey, you know what would be useful here? A gun, you know? So we wanted to bring in Domino, and we had to inject more fun into it, too, because it was a pretty grim little book, those first few issues, and we just needed some people to kind of lighten it up. And I mean, like, you know, having a team where basically people are getting blackmailed into joining the team, or being forced against their will to join the team, or, you know, it was just like, you know, just adding to that kind of gallows humor fun.
I remember when I first read the first storyline, and I remember, wow, I can't believe Wolverine is the sensible one in this book, and Cyclops is the bloodthirsty killer.
Right.
It's a really nice look at the way these characters function, and it also kind of emphasizes, you know, even though Cyclops is not really one of your main cast, and he's just there to, you know, for every now and then to kind of serve as, like, the, you know, giving them their orders, it's kind of nice to see, you know, how much that character has changed and grown since the character's beginnings, and you just get to see a completely different side of him. Now, was that something that you guys just decided, you know, I think this adds to that character because of the current status quo, or was it, you know, was it kind of editorially mandated? You gotta throw him in there every now and then because he has to give them their orders.
You know, honestly, like, we are huge fans of, like, the shared Marvel universe.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're a big believer in it, and I mean, like, to us, we approach everything we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we wrote I don't know. Mm-hmm. If we wrote, you know, Aranya, mm-hmm. we would approach Aranya like it was the flagship title of the Marvel Universe.
Uh-huh.
You know, so we're going to put in Cyclops. We're going to put in X-Men. Mm-hmm. We're going to have everything we do have on the larger universe.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to refer to things that are going on in other books because it's all important. You know, we don't want to scare away any new readers, and we have to do it in such a way that people can kind of understand it and not have to have read other things. But, you know, we love that tapestry. You know, we want it to work because we enjoy reading that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was one of my favorite things about the X-Men universe, and that's why when I started reading Messiah Complex. It was a more focused universe. There was a lot more, like, stuff happening in your books and in X-Men and in Uncanny, where you felt the consequences because of, House of M really changed things. And and you can still feel the changes of House of M to this day in the comics. So the X-Men stuff was just, I really enjoyed X-Force.
I really appreciate that. To us, it's like every question the fan has, you know, it's like, why don't they just go get Elixir? Like, we want to address that. We want to answer that. It's because Wolverine just pulled him on a Black Ops mission to, you know, Madripoor. You know, it's like we love that stuff. So, I mean, we, you know, as fans, you know, want to create a book that
became a big fan of Domino. Through your book.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, we love Domino. Yeah. And, like, you know, the whole Sex and Violence miniseries.
Yeah.
You know, like, discovering how much we love her.
Yeah.
We have so much fun doing this. Like, we want other people to enjoy it, too.
Yeah, speaking of Sex and Violence, that is such a gorgeous book. I'm really happy that they printed that reprinted that as an oversized hardcover because it really brings out the art. And it's such a fun X-Force story. It's not, you know, it's nowhere near as dark. You know, you don't have the stakes of all mutant kind is at hand, or there's no it's not really super high stakes as what their usual stories are, but. It's so much fun, you know. It's just nice, you know. It's kind of like personal business, but it involves X Force, and you guys made Razor Fist look like such a badass.
Yeah, Axel came to us and he's like, "Hey, I think I can get Gabriel D'Auto for a couple issues. Are you guys interested?" And we're just like, "Fuck yeah!" And he's like, "But here's the deal: you can only do big panels, maybe like 3 or 4 panels per page," and we're just like, we're in, great. We'd do like, you know, 3 issues of splash pages if you want, man. We would do anything to work with this guy because, like, his stuff is, I mean, you've seen it, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And when he started turning in covers and pages, we were just like, oh my God, we can quit now. we've hit the heights.
Nope.
But we didn't. But it was, and we wanted to do something that, like, he would have fun doing. Like, you know, our goal with every amazing artist we work with is, like, we want you to only want to work with us. So we're going to give you, like, you know, something, like, hopefully that you'll find so fun and awesome that you just want to draw it forever. So we just wanted to give him something just kicked ass, you know.
And it kicked ass. It was awesome.
Yeah, we were psyched. So, you know, it's just a fun little standalone, just like the Wolverine and Domino movie, like a little road movie for them.
Yeah.
And they
go out to kissing and hugging and bullets.
And you mentioned all the artists you work with. X-Force, you got to work with a lot of really fantastic artists. Like, you know, you got to work with Clayton Crane, Mike Choi. I think they pretty much encompass the entire run, and of course you have you have Gabrielle now writing. I mean, Mike Choi and Clayton Crane have completely different styles. Like, I was wondering, if you wrote any differently for them, would the script for, say, Mike be different for something you'd give to Clayton, or do you write? Kind of based on who you know you're working with?
You know, with both of them, like, I talked to Clayton a number of times, and we just kind of discussed, like, you know, anything that he wanted to see in there, we wanted to put in there. And Clayton's, you know, amazing. Like, we were just kind of blown away by some of those images. Like, that first image of Archangel when he kind of turns back. Like, that flash, I was like, damn. So we just wanted to put, you know, the most badass stuff we could in there for him. You know, like Choi's, you know, a storyteller, you know, in his own right. So he always has all kinds of, like, you know, ideas, like, take our script and just, you know, make it a billion times better with, you know, the choices. And, like, you know, like, we always try to, you know, keep everything simple on, like, the big images. So we never want to give somebody, like, an 11-panel page or anything like that. But, you know, Choi will... He'll add stuff in there that'll just, like, you know, like, show those details. Like, he's just, like, such a detail guy. And no matter how violent we would make a script for Mike Choi, he would trump us.
he had some really, really cool – he did some really cool covers during his run also on that book. Like, I remember that cover of Wolverine and Domino, which is which is pretty damn memorable. I mean, because
– Yeah.
And then he got to – and then there's the Warpath and Ghost Rider stuff, which was pretty amazing too. Yeah, it – You guys.
There was also a couple of issues where he drew X-23 just walking around with her arm in her hand.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yes.
That, you know, we never wanted anyone to think that X-23 was our favorite character. They were just like, well, how horrible can we be to her? Show everybody. But, yeah, we're abusive parents.
Speaking of abuse, though, there was this really messed up storyline that you guys did, like, which they collected in the third hardcover trade, and basically that's with a cliffhanger where you were three characters about to get killed, and you have the entire team jump forward in time for Messiah War, and you left us hanging for like how many months as to what's going to happen with particularly with Boom Boom. And
wasn't that awesome? We were pretty proud of that.
I remember you were actually, I think you were tweeting about how you were, you know, you were tweeting lines from Watchmen that Ozymandias had said about, I can feel every death. And I was like, that was messed up.
It was, yeah, because, I mean, like, now imagine the trade. You know, like, if that Messiah War interlude didn't happen, like, they'd blink out, you turn the page, or they'd blink back in. Mm-hmm. It was, I think that was largely Craig, but we were pretty happy with how that came out. It's just like you're on the middle of this most insane, intense mission ever. Like, lives are on the line, like, bullets are flying, and just all of a sudden, Cyclops hits a button, and you're gone. Because whatever Cyclops is up to at that moment trumped whatever life you were trying to save. And throughout the entire X-Force run, we were really trying to kind of ratchet up the tension between Cyclops and Wolverine. And, I mean, like, you know, Wolverine is trying to save a life, right? Mm-hmm. Cyclops is trying to save a species. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it really – they're both heroes. They're both trying to do the right thing. You're seeing this play out in Schism right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, we –
totally.
We always knew it was going there, and we always really kind of tried to lay their seeds, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even – it was that long ago?
Wow.
I mean, just like 2-3 years ago now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, obviously we didn't know the details of it. But,
sure,
you know,
but
we
still.
Kind of knew.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. I did not realize that. And you actually look at it right now. Yeah, that is pretty that could be a pretty relevant read for anyone who's like wondering where, you know, all this tension between the two has been coming from. But, you know, in the end Wolverine just, you know, he has such a respect for Cyclops and what he's trying to do. He, you know, he just kind of sticks it through. But then he and obviously this is the breaking point that we're seeing right now in Schism. Now, like, kind of touching upon that, you guys are part of, you know, being part of the X office, you guys got to do the X-Men summits in L.A. every year after San Diego. Now,
yeah.
How is that different from, like, say, the ones that they do in the Marvel offices every year? Like, you know, the Marvel, aside from just being focused on X-Men.
It's a smaller room. Mm-hmm. You know, it's generally there's, like, a direction, like a game plan for, mm-hmm. you know, for what's happening. And everybody's got their own books, and they all come in with ideas, but generally, like, the X universe is working towards, you know, one particular X goal. Mm-hmm. And I've never been in the big room. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, because it sounds like a scary, scary place. but, you know, my understanding is everyone comes in with pitches for, you know, their own books or big events or whatever. And, you know, they just kind of throw it out there and everybody shoots it down. And, you know, anything that survives, you know, is good enough. Mm-hmm. And, the X office, you know, generally, you know, operates, you know, a little happier, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. You know, like I said, I haven't done the big one, but But it's always been really smooth in the X-Office. I don't know what it is about X-Men, you know, that makes it that. But, I mean, everybody's always been great. Like, we've had nothing but good experiences in that.
Yeah, and, well, everyone loves those characters. So everyone kind of relates to those characters in some form or fashion. So I think everyone wants to see those characters kind of end up in a happy place. So people are more than willing to kind of be more relaxed and, you know, just worry about the characters and not get too pissy about it.
Yeah.
But, obviously, over the last few years, I think, you know, we've been seeing some of the best X-Men stuff. So clearly you guys know what you're doing over there.
Well, and I mean, it's continuing now. I mean, Jason Aaron and Rick Remender, and I mean, like those guys, and Kieran Gillen. I mean, that's some talent, you know. Those characters and those books attract, you know, the best talent. So I mean, like they're in good hands. I am not worried about that at all.
Excellent.
Now you're headed to the more bigger Marvel universe with Avengers stuff and the fallout of Fear itself.
Yeah. I've been kind of doing a few random things here and there, but you know, I'm always open to more X work. I am still talking to Nick Lowe and Daniel Ketchum and all those guys about all kinds of stuff. But for the moment, I have, you know, I did a project with Steve Wacker called Fear Itself, Spider-Man.
Yes, and
sounds really good.
Yes.
Oh, thanks, man. And then I'm doing Battle Scars and helping out with Fearless a little bit. Post Fear itself, and I got one more project lined up for the new year.
Yeah, we've seen the teaser for that, but we're not going to get into that just yet. You've kind of been entering the main Marvel universe, and I have to say, I enjoyed your Spider Island Avengers one shot with Mike McCone.
Thanks,
that was a lot of fun. I really like, you know, your handle on the characters. Obviously, you've been working on the, you know, with a lot of those characters, you know, writing, you know, the cartoon, so you kind of know these characters fairly well already. And it's just nice to kind of see the Avengers books have been, you know, pretty big stories, pretty serious stuff. And right now we have the Fear itself going on, and it's, you know, it's a really tough time to live in the Marvel universe. But it's nice to see like an Avengers book come out, and it's fairly relaxed, and it's fun, and everyone's being funny, and everyone's, you know, kind of reacting to this kind of ridiculous situation going on in Spider Island. And I just thought it was a nice breath of fresh air to read that book. It came out in a week where there was like some pretty heavy Fear itself related stuff coming out.
Yeah, I mean, like for me, it's like, you know, working with the X-Men. I mean, the X-Men, you know, just by their situation after House of M and Decimation, and just in general, I mean, they're feared and hated. You know, so by definition, they're a little grim.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I like to do fun stuff. So I mean, like to me, you know, with Spider Island, Spider Island hadn't gotten to the bad point yet as far as like the events of the story.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, it still could be fun. You know, people just everybody got spider powers. Like, mm-hmm. how would the Avengers kind of handle that? Mm-hmm. I mean, like Hawkeye's a fun character, mm-hmm. and you know, Jessica Jones and Ms. Marvel. I mean, they're fun characters. Mm-hmm. Like the Avengers themselves are Iron Man and Red Hulk and all these guys. Mm-hmm. They're running all over the town trying to contain this. And my goal anytime I work on any kind of tie-in thing is not to screw anything up, mm-hmm. you know. Like, you know, Dan Slott is crafting this huge epic tale, and I don't want to mess it up, so I'm just going to try to find, you know, a little pocket where I can play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Speaking of fun comics, Killer of Demons,
yes.
I really, really like that comic.
Oh, thank you. I love Killer of Demons. Like, that was kind of my first and so far only creator-owned thing. And, yeah, I just wanted to do something fun.
Is there any chance?
Yeah, chance for more?
You know, there's always a chance for more. I mean, it's Scott Wagner, who's amazing and, like, did such great work on that. I mean, he's obviously got his Atomic Robo gig, which he very rightly so loves and is doing amazing stuff on. So, I mean, if, you know, if there's ever a chance and the stars align, there are more Killer of Demons stories to be told.
Oh, that's cool.
I'd be all over that book, man. It is so much fun. And his art style is just perfect, too. And I remember, like, one of the first images I've seen from that is just, like, a pinup of him just kind of, I think, you know, he's in a diner. And I just love the facial expressions and just the way that whole book was handled. So
yeah, he's a talent for sure. Like, he's done, we did the Avengers animated you know, comic together. And, I mean, he, in the stuff he did on Robo and Killer Demons, and his style has evolved and just gotten so much better. And but I agree, like, the facial expressions and, like, the acting that he does is phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. And, oh, go on, Antonio, did you have a question?
I was actually just wondering, since we were talking about all your Marvel stuff, but you did a year on Red Robin for DC. How did that come about? Did they ask you to pitch, or were you offered?
It's Mike Martz who kind of launched us on New X-Men. Mm-hmm. He just kind of like, I think we were in San Diego, and we kind of ran into each other. And the thing with me is because I do so much animation and studio stuff, like people I think really just assume I'm kind of Marvel exclusive. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't at the time. And,
right.
And he just kind of said, hey, are you available? And I'm like, yeah, I'm totally available. I don't know why you guys haven't called me before. And he's like, well, all right, I want to talk to you about a book. And I'm like, sweet, I've never really kind of played in the DC universe. I was kind of a Marvel guy, but I was excited about it. And, you know, we started talking, and he's like, well, what do you think about Red Robin? And I'm like, wait, what? And then, you know, he kind of told me the whole story of what was happening with Batman and what Grant was doing. And, you know, I'd been, you know, keeping on top of it. But, you know, you get busy, and just talking about all the changes they're going to be doing. Like with RIP and stuff like that, and it sounded great, and I'm like, I'm in, because it was great, because like that year on the book, like we were able to, you know, have like a very specific mission statement, like of everybody in the DC universe. Tim Drake didn't believe that Batman was dead, even though Superman came out with his body and said Batman's dead. Tim Drake is like, fuck that, he's Batman, and he's alive.
You gave him, like, big balls, too, because you went up against Ra's al Ghul and with no fear. I liked your run, man. It was really good.
Yeah, you know, like, I'm a big believer in, like, the big win. Like, I'm never going to write that story where you got the sad ending and people kind of, like, walk off all sad and die. And I mean, they're going to die in the middle of the story, but they're not going to die at the end. I just wanted to give Tim Drake, like, you know, that big win, you know, like, that kid had a hard life.
Yep.
Like the last few years is like, you know, it's like mom dies, dad dies, Batman dies, Bart dies, Connor dies. Like, they're all, oh, Jesus. Like, I don't know how that kid didn't take him off. So I just wanted to give him, you know, I wanted to give him a win.
Yeah, totally.
And I'd like to think I did.
Yes, no, I agree. One other thing I wanted to ask about was that one issue 10 of Runaways you did. I loved. That Runaways is one of my favorites, my favorite comics. And when you came on, I was actually really excited because you just handled Molly and the X-Men. It was just that was a fun book.
I got to play with them a little bit in the Secret Invasion.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
I was
actually hoping you'd be the guy to take over after Vaughn left.
Well, you know, it's a tough act to follow. And then, like, Joss Whedon came on. I'm like, do I really want to follow Joss Whedon? But, you know, the Molly story was something that, you know, we had talked about a couple times. And, you know, they did that Free Comic Book Day story where the X-Men came and kind of offered Molly an in. And, you know, with the Manifest Destiny story in X-Men, it just seemed like a logical thing to have a little fun with. And I mean, the bottom line is Molly's, her reality, you know, like being that young and finding out your parents are evil and basically losing them is rough. Like, that's a rough, sad story. And she puts on a pretty positive face. But, I mean, you know, there was a story there. So, I mean, I was glad I was able to kind of tackle it.
And, okay, well, we'll kind of get into some of your more current work before we start answering some of our listener questions. With the Fearless, like, how you're working with writers like Cullen Bunn and Matt Fraction. Like, do you guys have collaborate? I'm not trying to see how that collaboration works. Do you guys have split up an issue, or do you guys alternate between issues on that title?
Well, here's what happened with that. Originally, Fearless and Battlestars was going to be one book.
Mm-hmm.
And they were going to intertwine and go back and forth, and, you know, they'd kind of collide in the middle of it. And so we all kind of got on the phone, Tom and Alejandro and Lauren and the editorial office, mm-hmm. and Colin and Matt and I, and Matt, you know, we kind of just kind of talked it out. And at a certain point, like, we had so much story, you know, mm-hmm. Matt made the observation, you know, this is really two books. Mm-hmm. And, it, you know, it kind of, like, changed the game, and it was a great, you know, great observation. So we kind of split it into two books, but we all kind of worked together on, like, the general stories. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even though we're all kind of listed on each book, we really kind of talked it out and hashed it out conference style. And then, you know, Colin is taking the lead on Fearless, mm-hmm. and doing the scripts, and I'm taking the lead and doing the scripts on Battlestars.
Okay.
So I am not, you know, writing scripts for Fearless. I mean, like, I see them, and, you know, if I've got comments, you know, I give them. But largely my comments are like, that's awesome and cool and I can't see it. And,
so you guys are basically kind of like a writer's room type of situation, right, with those books?
Yeah, so we kind of hammered out the story, and then one writer goes off and writes the episode.
Fantastic.
Oh,
and,
that's cool.
They now, I know you can't talk about anything about this particular book yet, but they released a teaser image for point one, which is going to be later this year or early next year. And
yeah.
It looks like you and Ryan Stegman, who is fantastic, by the way, are working together on the project. What are you allowed to say about this particular title?
The point one is kind of like a jam session book that comes out in November. That's like a bunch of short stories that kind of like set the stage for 2012.
Uh-huh.
So you got Bendis and Hitch doing something. You got Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness doing another thing. And my name, unless it was a typo, was attached to this Ryan Stegman project. And the image is of a Spider-Man looking figure with reddish eyes and a blue hoodie that may be evocative of some character called the Scarlet Spider. And this is going to be coming out of Spider Island. So read Spider Island, mm-hmm. and you will learn who this character may or may not be.
Okay.
And then come November, you'll get a little short taste of the adventures of said mystery character. And then come January, you will get even more.
Oh, okay.
Fantastic.
And although I cannot confirm nor deny anything, Ryan Stegman's pages rule. Like, he is so talented, it makes me kind of cry.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can turn in weaker scripts now because his art will be the star of the show.
Mm-hmm.
He's amazing. So I'm, again, like, I've been so lucky when it comes to artists, and that luck is continuing. And we're having a blast on it.
So this
is about all I can say.
Okay. Well, one last thing about it, though. Is this
sure.
going to be an ongoing book or a miniseries?
I don't know.
Okay. We'll leave it at that then.
I assume that everything I work on will be an ongoing series because everyone will love it so much. I'm still writing Spider Island Avengers number 2, but mm-hmm. Oddly, nobody's returning my calls.
There is a rather large fan base for that character, the Scarlet Spider character. And it always amazes me how people keep bringing that character up. And a lot of those guys are very excited because they can't help but think that this may be it.
There is a passionate fan base for all kinds of things. But we, Harry and I, are very aware of that and excited about it.
Excellent. Okay, well, we'll take we have a few listener questions here that I'm going to bring up real quick.
Okay.
The first question I have actually is about what we just talked about, so we're not even going to get into that anymore. I have a question here from a gentleman named Alex Lannon, and he's asking have you been given any directives by Marvel in regards to what characters to include in a series?
I think like you have to use like Squirrel Girl.
Yeah, that's
like
sort
that
of thing.
Uh-huh. No. I mean, we get suggestions here and there of like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if you did this, or wouldn't it be cool if you did that? But, I mean, nobody's ever been like, you must, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. And another question I have is from Sean Pryor, and he asks, I think we may have covered this, but again, if you have any other insight to add, you can just say, what are the major differences between writing for comics and writing for animation?
Generally, I will write animation in a rocking chair, whereas I will write comics on the floor. They're very similar. My outlines are more detailed for animation. The approval process is, you know, generally like I'll turn in a script and the editor's like, that's great or that sucks or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with animation, generally there's a lot more money involved, so a lot more people want to look at things and fiddle with them. You know, I mean, I think the process of writing is, you know, similar. It's like, you know, instead of act breaks, you're looking at page turns or cliffhangers or, you know, stuff like that. But, I mean, like, you know, I do an outline for a comic book. I do an outline for a show. I mean, my outlines for a comic book are a couple pages long. Outline for an animated series is like 10 pages long, you know. So it's with an animation outline, you could basically, you know, give to anyone and get, like, the episode you had in mind. With the comic book, you know, there's a lot more, like, free play kind of in the scripting of it.
Excellent.
And, at least that's how I do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, everyone has their own way, but yeah, it's kind of cool to kind of get a glimpse into your own process. Now, before we start finishing up, I kind of wanted to touch on it because we haven't gotten a chance to really spend any time on it at all during the show, but I just wanted to say how much I love the Avengers animated series that's currently running. I love how you guys, you know, I love how it's, you know, really, it's a good serialized story also, but, you know, done for TV. And it's something that I think that I've been missing, you know, for a long time as far as cartoons go. So it's very enjoyable, and I'm aching to see the next season already because of that cliffhanger at the end of the last season.
Thanks, man. I love the show, and I mean, like, we you know, Josh Fine, and he's the producer of the show, and Ciro Nielli and Frank Parr, the directors, and myself, we really wanted to, you know, do the Avengers justice, you know. It's like the comic book, you know, the comic book is great, and we wanted to give the fans and new audiences, you know, we wanted to give the fans something they loved, and we wanted to give new audiences the reason why those fans love it. Mm-hmm. You know, we wanted to show kids why comic books are awesome. Mm-hmm. And why these characters have been around for 50 or 60 years, you know? Yeah. I mean, like, that was the goal. And have fun, you know? We wanted it to be a fun show. You know, like, the bar for our teen superhero shows, obviously, is Justice League, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're like, you know what? Hey, Marvel's awesome. We want to have an awesome show.
That's how I felt about Wolverine and the X-Men. I love that cartoon. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah.
I was a big fan of that show. I was really disappointed to get his second season.
I was as well, because, I mean, they set it up and they were ready to go. I think they'd even written scripts for it, and sadly, you know, things just didn't work out, you know, for any number of reasons. But I when they gave me the call and said, hey, can you sit down and talk some Wolverine and the X-Men, like, I kind of came in kind of like the first, you know, half of it, and I kind of stayed in the middle, and then I went off and did, I think, Iron Man. But that show was a blast. I mean, like, that's hardcore comic books come to life. Like, I say that about Avengers, but, like, Wolverine and the X-Men was like, wow.
Yeah,
like,
I really felt like that. I felt like I was watching a comic book because you guys took time to tell, like, side stories or, like, origin stories or whatever, but you guys were telling a bigger story overall, and, you know, towards the end, you guys just hit, there was running, and then that cliffhanger, it was a really great cartoon.
Yeah, I would say, like, it kicks off with a three-parter, and then continues into a 23-parter.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's like, it was one story.
It was like an issue every week.
And all credit to Greg Johnson and Craig Kyle on that. I mean, like, they really, like, and that was a brain twister, man. Like, I've never, like, worked on a show where it was, like, it was such a puzzle to put together because of the time travel aspect of it.
Oh, yeah.
But that was tricky. And, but they did a great job, and it was a satisfying conclusion.
Yeah, I was kind of, I was a little bummed they killed off one of my favorite characters at the end. Like,
but what a way to go.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That is a way. It was a great way to go for her, and it kind of showed what she's all about. But I was still disappointed they killed her off.
Well, but, didn't something similar happen to her in the comics? And
oh, yeah, but yeah, they did put her back together in the comics in New X-Men, so that's perfectly fine. I did want to, like, kind of going back to Avengers, though. Do you have any ideas to when the second season starts airing at Disney XD, or...?
I don't. You know, because of the movies coming out, I think they really want to have, like, their scheduling plan, like, solid. I mean, I think that they're you're waiting a little bit to get closer to the movie and then just have, like, a big Avengers kind of event.
That makes perfect sense, yeah.
And, but it's frustrating and hard to wait because, I mean, you know, cliffhangers never fun to yeah. summer on. And, you know, hopefully people will still be just as jazzed when it comes back on because it comes back pretty strong.
Awesome. And of course, I saw the new designs, too, that were posted online, and I was like, wow, I can't wait to see this thing start. Okay, once again, thank you for being on the show, Chris. Where can people find you online?
At Twitter, I'm just Yoast, Y-O-S-T. Mm-hmm. I think Yoast.tv may still be up somewhere, but Twitter right now is the place to find me. I think I have a Facebook page, too.
Okay. And for the final question of the show, which is we try to have a little bit of fun with this. What mutant character that has been killed off did you wish you could have gotten the chance to kill off yourself?
Oh, God. You know what? I have answered this question and made it real. I killed Mama Max. For whatever reason, and Mike Mark loved that character, and he was so bummed out when we did it, but I was just like, that is the dumbest thing ever. And, you know, I think who created Mama Max? Was it Milligan?
No, it was Austin, Chuck Austin, I believe.
You know, no disrespect to anybody, but I was just like, really? So we had Predator X eat it. Let me think here. You know, it's funny because, like, a lot of the characters that have died in our book, kind of like we were really bummed about. You know, Greg and I couldn't even begin to tell you what huge fans of Nightcrawler we are.
You guys got, like, to kill him in your book.
That was just like, you know, just the way the schedule fell, mm-hmm. really. But, I mean, like, we were like, well, you know what, if that character's got to go, well, you know, let us be the ones to do it. You know, at least we're going to...
Hated you.
We were going to do our best to give him the, you know, the most heroic best.
That was really, that touched me. That would, I mean, I was sad to see him go, but the way you guys handled it was beautiful.
Yeah, that was our
Logan's
that was our goal.
Reaction was fantastic. Just yeah. when he saw it, and then, you know, his claws kind of popped back in, and he just goes, yeah. Elf, like, oh no. and Mike really brought it too, like, with the facial expression that really sealed the deal.
Choi, I don't even know how to describe what he brought to it. Like, it was just like, we got a little misty when we saw those pages, because we're just like, damn.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. And okay, once again, Chris, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. I know you're pretty busy with all, you know, the writing and all the stuff coming up, but I look forward to, you know, what you have coming as far as your comics were concerned, and of course all the animation stuff is just great. So again, thank you, and we'll be sure to link to your stuff as well.
Well, thank you guys, and this is great. So anytime.
Oh, awesome, sir. Well. Thank you again, and you take care.
All right, man, you too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Before the song plays, I just wanted to make sure you're aware. Before her song is it's a little Kickstarter ad for a friend of mine, Mr. Dave Acampo. He is trying to fund his new comic project, Sparrow and Crow. And he's a really good writer, really smart writer, actually, and a really good dude. I wanted to help him out, so I had him record this little bit here at the end and to kind of pitch his project to you. If you are interested in what he talks about, be sure to stop by the link, the Kickstarter link on the show notes for this. And, if you want to give whatever you want to donate to the cause, you're welcome to do so. Dave's a good dude, and I wanted to help him out. So, that's pretty much it. Enjoy, and see you next week.
Hi, folks. I'm Dave Acampo, and you may know me as the co-host of the Fuzzy Typewriter podcast with my friend Paul Montgomery. Prior to that, I was actually the co-creator and executive producer of Wormwood, a serialized mystery. This was a full cast audio drama that ran from our website, wormwoodshow.com, and also on iTunes for the past few years. We wrapped that up last year, and since then we've been working on further expanding that universe and those characters that have become very popular. And that's why I'm actually talking to you today. We are launching a Kickstarter campaign to help us with production costs and marketing costs associated with our new comic book miniseries. Sparrow and Crow, The Demoniac of Los Angeles, is a 5-part original comics miniseries that is going to be published by Hermes Press in the spring of 2012. But it is a creator-owned venture. We are trying to raise money to help us produce this comic in the way we know best, in the way we want to do it. So we need your help. If you're into horror comics, if you are into mystery comics, crime, noir, if these words mean anything to you, if they hit a button for you, then you definitely want to check out our website, sparrowandcrow.com. Crow has an E at the end of it, so it's sparrowandcrowe.com. These are our characters, Dr. Xander Crow, once a psychologist of great prominence who had tragedy befall him, and he started to investigate the dark pathways of the occult, and now he works as sort of a washed-up occult exorcist traipsing around Los Angeles with his partner, the sardonic goth hacker named Sparrow, who helps him set up jobs. And this is all about Sparrow and Crow getting mixed up with LA's mob boss, Don Marino, when his daughter becomes possessed by an entity that is all too familiar to Crow. This is a lot of fun. We're very excited about it. It came to us through artist Jared Souza, who approached us as a fan of the Wormwood show and was curious about adapting it. So Jeremy Rogers and I, the co-creators of Wormwood, we started thinking about what other stories we could tell and settled on this. We put together a pitch book based on Jared's art and our writing, and we landed our publisher, Hermes Press. So if I could ask anything, it would just be that you visit sparrowandcrow.com, remember that's Crow with an E, and you check out our Kickstarter video where we explain the concept probably better than I'm doing right now, and you get to see some of the artwork, you can read more about the story, and then you can click through to our Kickstarter campaign. This is not just giving us money to help us produce this comic book. We have great rewards. We have signed copies of the book, signed scripts, we have art prints, we have art pages, we have original pages from the comic book. Hermes Press has stepped in and donated some of their great hardcover reprint books. So there's a lot of great stuff. And really just check out the site and see if you can help us in any way. And I thank you very much for your time.
The views and opinions expressed by the guests and those providing comments are theirs alone and do not necessarily reflect the views of Pat Loika. You can reach Pat by sending an email to loikamania@gmail.com. This has been a Dial R Studios production.